everybody. I'm thrilled to have you all here with us today. My name is Julie Evans, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Project Tomorrow. And you're joining us here today for a very exciting event, which is the release of our second Speak Up 2009 report. This particular report is focusing in on the data that we collected last fall from teachers, pre-service teachers, and administrators. So we have a fabulous program for you today. This is a great quote that was actually part of the Speak Up data. We asked administrators to envision for us what schools would look like in 2019.
Thank you, sir. What schools would look like in 2019. And there's a couple key points that I really liked in this particular quote, which is from a principal in Michigan. He talked about a 24-hour learning opportunity. He talked about teachers leading and assisting students in a discovery process. He talked about every student being impacted in this new learning paradigm, and that learning would occur both online as well as physical school buildings would be open to the community. Let's keep that in mind as we go through our program here today in terms of visioning 2019. As I said, we have a fabulous program for you here today. We're going to start off with some welcoming comments. I have some distinguished guests who are going to share with you some welcoming comments. And then we are thrilled to have Roberto Rodriguez here from the White House to be speaking and sharing some of his thoughts as well. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you some of the data findings from Speak Up 2009. You also all have received one of the recent reports. And we're going to do something a little bit different this time. I'm going to share some of the data, and then we're going to have a panel that's going to reflect on those data findings at the same time. Then I'm going to share a little bit more data, and we'll reflect again. So we'll go back and forth with plenty of time for Q&A and all your thoughts at the end. So a couple key questions were drivers in this year's Speak Up 2009 for teachers, pre-service teachers, and administrators. And the first one was to do a compare and contrast between what the student vision of 21st century learning is and what is actually happening in our schools. And also, are the schools set up to address some of the expectations that the students have? In addition, we wanted to do, and this was something special this year, we also wanted to take a look at what was the pre-service teachers' opinions, what their values and insights were on using technology. And so we've included that data here as well for you. So in case you're not familiar with Speak Up, it is an annual national research project. We've been doing this since fall of 2003, really to inform discussions such as we're having today, as well as to help local schools and districts understand how to better utilize technology, and also to understand what some of the expectations are of their students around 21st century learning. We also focus on the survey on math and science instruction as well. So since fall of 2003, we've had about 1.85 million surveys submitted to us, representing about 23,000 schools nationwide. Project Tomorrow is a national education nonprofit group. Our particular focus is on science, math, and technology education, and also empowering student voice. And the types of questions that we ask on the survey, as I mentioned, are around learning and teaching with technology, math, and science instruction. We also ask teachers about their professional development needs. We ask administrators about the type of challenges that they face. And we ask all the respondents to comment on many of the emerging technologies that we're seeing both in our personal lives as well as in our school lives. And we also ask the respondents to think about envisioning that ultimate school, that ultimate classroom, that ultimate learning space. What type of technologies will drive student achievement? I have some wonderful sponsors that help us make Speak Up possible for all the schools and districts in the country, and I want to recognize some of them that are here with us today. From Smart Technologies, Mick Atkinson and Kimberly Haft are here. From CDWG, we have a nice team. Where's my CDWG team? Over here. Anne-Marie Clark is here. Liz White is here. Matt Varin. Who am I forgetting? Kelly? Carthur? Carraher. And also Meredith and Gail are here from O'Keefe and Company. My friends from K-12 are here. Mary Beth Chalenko and Tom and Jennifer, who I've not met yet, but look forward to it as well. We also have wonderful support from Blackboard. Duncan Moss is here, and several of his team are here with him. Jennifer. We're also supported by School Wires and WIMBA. And we have are going to be using a number of different learning technologies from SMART today, and you'll kind of see how we're going to be doing that as we go through. We also have some wonderful partners that help us with outreach. My good friends are here from CETA today. I know I saw Doug and Sarah. They're over there, as well as my friends from the National School Boards Association. Jean is here as well. And then my friends from iNACOL, Allison, is here as well. We also did some new partnerships this year, including with AACTE, APLU, and the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. And I know Alicia is here from AACTE. Somewhere, right there. Thank you, Alicia. Okay, let's get right into some of our other welcoming comments, and then we'll get into the data. I'm thrilled to have Natalie Price here with us today. Natalie is from the office of Congresswoman Lucille Roybal Allard. And as you all know, the Congresswoman has been a strong supporter of education technology and 21st century learning, and also she helped us get this room today. So Natalie has a few comments for us. Thank you, Natalie.
There we go. Thank you, Julie, and thank you all for being here today. Congresswoman Roybal Allard is sorry she can't be here to participate in this discussion, but she'll be happy to hear that there are so many of you here interested in education technology. As I'm sure you'll hear several times today, education technology has such a positive impact on student achievement, and unfortunately, too few students in the classroom have adequate access to technology. So Congresswoman Roybal Allard has been dedicated to increasing federal funding, especially through the Enhancing Education Through Technology program, which provides resources for states and school districts to purchase education technology and train teachers how to use that technology. She's also the lead co-sponsor of the ATTAIN Act, which would better target the resources we have for education technology towards the students that really need it. It's always difficult to get additional funding, but Congresswoman Roybal Allard is working very hard this year to increasing federal investment in education technology. Because she understands just how important it is and that it's really the key to engaging students and making sure that they're ready for the challenges of the 21st century. So thank you all for being here, and thank you for sharing your research with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again, Natalie, for taking time out of your day to join us. Our next speaker is Liz White, who's the Senior Marketing Manager with CDW Government. CDW has been a longtime sponsor of our Speak Up efforts, and so it's lovely to have you here with us, Liz, to do some welcoming comments as well.
Good afternoon, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. I'm Liz White, the Senior Marketing Manager for K-12 Education with CDWG. CDWG is an organization that works with educators across the country to improve learning through the application of educational technology. We're excited to be with you today to share the findings of the 2009 Speak Up Survey. Working as closely as we do with schools, we know that input from students, parents, and educators really does help teachers and administrators to shape their technology plans and policies. This year, more than ever, we see that each group of education stakeholders sees real value in educational technology. For many, technology has become an integral part of the daily learning experience. With that integration, teachers and administrators understand that support for technology is critical to successful student engagement. Yet support is often where we encounter the greatest challenges, and the Speak Up survey results reflect this dilemma clearly. When asked about their challenges with using technology as an instructional tool, administrators said that providing support for technology is a top concern. And teachers noted that a major obstacle to them is slow internet access, insufficient support, and inadequate technology in the classroom. These obstacles all point to the need for a better IT infrastructure to support technology tools, as well as to build a learning environment that extends beyond the classroom walls. Not coincidentally, infrastructure is one of the five components of the recently announced National Education Technology Plan. In the plan, the Department of Education calls for always-on learning resources, a cross-section of school leadership that will develop, maintain, and manage the infrastructure to transform teaching and learning. I have no doubt that all of us in this room want to provide students with an interactive and engaging learning environment. The challenge, however, that is in their drive to improve students' classroom experiences, districts sometimes prioritize the adoption of new technology platforms before they have the right underlying IT infrastructure in place to support it. We agree with the Department of Education that without a robust IT infrastructure, even the most powerful technologies can fail. So where does that leave us? As vendors, it's crucial that we provide schools not only with technology tools that will engage students, but also with expertise and guidance to ensure that every solution is properly supported. As educators, it's crucial that you continue to demand resources, tools, and support to be successful. The annual Speak Up survey gives you an opportunity to be heard. Working together, we can ensure that technology integration enables both student and teacher success. On behalf of CDWG, I want to thank Julie and her team from Project Tomorrow for making this study and today's event happen. I'd also like to thank all of you for being with us today and your interest in Speak Up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz, and thank you to the entire CDWG team. It's great to have the support of all of our sponsors here on this very exciting day. Next on the agenda was Roberto Rodriguez. He has not shown up at this point, so what we're going to do is move ahead with the program, and then when Mr. Rodriguez gets here, we'll move him into the program. Sound okay? Okay, so what we're going to be doing is, as I said, I'm going to be sharing some of the data findings, and then also having an interactive panel discussion. So what I'd like to do is invite my panelists to come up at this time and take their seats so that we can do this interactively. Thank you. And I will introduce them to you shortly. We are going to be looking at the Speak Up data findings from last fall. Speak Up was open for about 6.5 weeks, 7 weeks, during fall of 2009. And we had about 370,000 surveys that were submitted to us. And you can see here what the breakdown was between students, teachers, parents, school and district administrators, as well as I said, for the first time, our pre-service teachers. We also had participation from all 50 states, from schools in all 50 states, and you can see here some of what we call kind of our high-flying states in terms of their participation in the Speak Up survey. About 97% of the schools that participated in Speak Up were public schools, and a nice distribution between urban, rural, and suburban schools in the population itself, as well as from our schools of education, about 89% of those were four-year public institutions, and about two-thirds of the students that responded from the pre-service survey were undergraduates, and one-third were graduate students in degree programs. So let's get into the actual data findings. Some of you may have been with us back in March when we released our student and parent data. That was a particular report that we call Creating Our Future, Students Speak Up About the Vision for 21st Century Learning. In that report, we talked about the continuing frustration that students have with the use of technology in their school, and also how they are not only adopting these emerging technologies faster than many of us, but also adapting them for learning purposes. We also talked about the fact that the students in many ways are functioning as a digital advance team for the rest of us. If we pay attention to what the students are doing with their use of technology outside of school, it actually can start drawing a picture for us on how they would like to be using that technology within the school day. So what we saw emerging from all this was a truly unique student vision for leveraging emerging technologies within education. And that student vision had three key components. The first part is social-based learning. The students told us that they were very interested in learning in a collaborative way with their peers, as also with other experts. They also wanted to facilitate, as much as possible, different communications devices. They also were interested in untethered learning, learning that was not bound by a particular classroom or a particular even set of technology, but learning that was happening 24/7, thinking back to that quote that we had from that principal in Michigan. And finally, the students told us that they were very interested in a contextually based learning experience that was leveraging digital content to bring that relevancy into their day. So coming back to those three questions that we had, the student vision, how do the educators compare in their vision? Are schools meeting those expectations, and are we preparing the next generation of students? What we did is that in our second report, we are calling this one Unleashing the Future. Educators speak up about the emerging technologies, and the report is set up to be a reflection on the student vision, as you will see. So let me introduce you to our panel here. I'm very excited about this panel. Not only do we have students represented today, but we have pre-service teachers, aspiring teachers, soon-to-be teachers, even though they're already in classrooms doing their student teaching right now. We have a teacher with us, and we also have a principal. So I'm going to start way down at the end with my new friend, Dr. Word. Dr. Word is the principal at Kenmore Middle School that's here in Arlington, Virginia, and I had the distinct pleasure yesterday to do a site visit to Dr. Word's school. I spent some time with some of his students doing a focus group and visiting some of his classrooms. It was really a great experience. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Word. Jennifer Rankin is a teacher at Northern Middle School, which is in Garrett County, Maryland. Most notably, though, I've only just met Jennifer in the last couple weeks, but I feel like we're already best friends. She is Maryland's Teacher of the Year, so we are absolutely thrilled to have Jennifer here with us. And a little sneak peek on Jennifer. She's a big technology user, and so we're going to find out about that as well. Sitting next to Jennifer are our two representatives of our next generation of teachers. I have Angie. I know her tag says Angela, but I'm going to try and call her Angie Umbel. And she is a fourth-year student at Frostburg State University. Next to her is Crystal Alexander, who's also a fourth-year student at Frostburg State University. And I want to do a shout-out to Ken Widmer, the dean of the School of Education from Frostburg State University as well, for sharing some of his very best teachers with us today. So we're going to learn a little bit about the preschool teacher experience from Angie and Crystal. And then next to them are our two 10th grade students that are on our panel today. And this is a repeat performance for them. They had so much fun. They came back. They were with us in March when we released our student and parent data. So those of you that joined us then are going to be familiar with JJ and Jill. They are 10th grade students at Washington Lee High School, which is also here in Arlington, Virginia. So congratulations and welcome to my entire panel. Okay, so let's get into some of the data. But to start off, what we want to do is role model with you a little bit the use of some of the tools. Are we ready for that, Kimberly?
Sure. If you don't have one, let us know and we can pass them along.
So we're going to do a little warm-up exercise using the SMART response, student response systems. So if you've not had the opportunity to work with a student response system, just to give you a little bit of background, a teacher may very well use these type of devices to get a snap assessment of how their students are doing on a particular content that they're working through. They may also use it to do some little quizzes, a number of different activities. And so we're going to do a couple questions through our day, our time here together, just to give you some experience with it and also for me to get to know you a little bit. So the first one is kind of a fun warm-up exercise. Imagine you're going to spend a month on a deserted island. What is the one mobile technology you would just absolutely have to have with you? And just so, you know, because I know there's always someone in the audience that says, well, how could that be if it's a truly deserted island? We're going to do solar panel, okay? So we got it handled. And Kimberly, I'm going to need a little help to get started up here. So you've got six choices. Do we need to start up the Smart responses? Are they all set? Okay. So you've got six responses you're going to choose from. You can only choose one. Sorry, folks. Is that absolutely essential mobile technology? A smartphone, a handheld video game player, a laptop, a digital reader like a Kindle, an MP3 player, your iPod, or those handheld latte frothers? I don't know if you've seen them, but you've just got to have one if you're going to be on a deserted island, for some of us. So go ahead and choose, start choosing your responses. Yeah. You can only choose one. And you do have to press enter twice. So choose A, B, C, D, E, or F, and press enter twice. And Kimberly, you're going to stop it over there. You're going to control it from the board, right?
I can stop it.
Sure. Go ahead.
63 and 66.
Yeah, we're good.
Go ahead and stop.
So let's see what our audience here is thinking. It looks like our first choice here is a smartphone. About 53% of our audience said smartphone. About 36% said a laptop. 6% said a digital reader. Interesting. I see a tiny little bit there that said the MP3 player and maybe the handheld video game. I'm not sure if anyone actually chose my latte frother, but maybe. You can see this will give a teacher a snapshot of where they are in terms of the class.
Do you want to move ahead?
Yeah. Oops. Missed one. Thank you. And do I need to close down the side, or I'm just going
to
move it on the side?
Oh, you can
go back. Yeah, I think I'm good. Thank you. Thank you, Kimberly. We'll do a few more of those. So getting into the value proposition, you know, that question comes up a lot here in Washington, D.C. It comes up a lot in different state capitals. I know it comes up in school board meetings. So what is the value proposition around using technology in education? I thought what we would do is share with you what we heard from teachers, district-level administrators, and principals. So just to take a look at this, in terms of the extremely important, if you see there, it really was the district administrators that were out in front in terms of ranking technology as being extremely important to their students' success. Principals were a little bit behind them. Teachers were a little bit behind that. So what we thought was particularly interesting was that the, from a district administration standpoint, much stronger intensity around the extreme importance of using technology than some of the other folks. We asked teachers, so how has your use of technology within instruction impacted your students? So to get the teacher perspective on this, teachers, as you can see, a majority said their students were more motivated to learn as a result of using technology and also were developing creativity. Oops, sorry about that. Now here's our second opportunity, Kimberly. You're going to help. Kimberly is going to play Vanna White for me since I can't get to the board easily here today. What we're going to do is that we're going to ask you a question. So what do you think, and I chose one particular type of emerging technologies. I chose mobile devices because we had a lot of conversations about those at our first briefing. So besides using the mobile devices for communications and research, what do you think the students told us was the next favorite benefit or what they thought the most significant benefit would be of using mobile devices, a cell phone, a smartphone, an iPod, in school to help them with schoolwork? Would it be to access their social networking site, to play educational games, maybe to share some documents, some different types of media, to receive reminders or alerts, or to take videos of class presentation or labs to review them later? What do you think the students told us was the next most significant? So go ahead again, choose A through E, double two enters. And I know that we don't have enough smart responses for everybody, so maybe after you've done one or two, you can pass it to your neighbor, and we can all have an opportunity. Okay, Kimberly, let's see what we've got here. Ooh, look at this. We're kind of like all over the board in terms of the opinions. So what I see is a kind of nice, almost even distribution. Probably the top one that came up was sharing documents, different types of media. That was C. That was 33% of you. 23% said accessing social networks. Okay, so let's go on. Thanks, Kimberly, for showing us in a chart. Let's go on, and I'll actually show you what the students told us. Actually, it was to receive reminders and alerts on their devices. Now, that really gets to a core thing that we have been hearing from students for several years, is that where we may think about these devices as having high engagement value, the students agree with that, but they also very much value the fact that these devices and most of the different emerging technologies can help them with organization, with productivity, with effectiveness. So in the same way that we're starting to use these devices to help us with our own personal productivity, the students are thinking about it exactly the same way. I think I can do this and get back up to that. We asked the teacher, so how has the use of technology improved your effectiveness as a teacher? And interestingly, teachers talk about the organization skills, that they feel better organized, they feel more productive. They also talk about being able to create more relevant lessons, time to differentiate instruction. So we asked administrators, what are the challenges that wake you up in the middle of the night? Because we were trying to understand who our audience is. Now, I know that we all have challenges in our daily professional lives that wake us up in the middle of the night. Let's find out what the administrators told us. And what we did for you today is that we disaggregated the data looking at the administrators in our poll set that were from district office versus school site principals. Now, what we found from district office personnel was that funding is number one, absolutely the challenge that's waking them up. But the number two challenge for our district administrators was around these challenges associated with the use of technology. Principals, it's all about test scores, particularly on standardized tests, as you would expect, followed by funding, communication with parents. And then much further down the line, we saw principals being concerned about technology. We asked, beside the funding issues specific to technology, what are the issues that are most challenging for your district? So within the context of technology, what are the most challenging that you have? And what we heard was it's around this concept of how to effectively evaluate all of these different emerging technologies that are out there, all the ones that we know that our students are using outside of school, maybe bringing into school. How do you evaluate those for appropriate within education academic purposes? So that brings us right back to that social-based learning, the untethered learning, the digitally rich learning environments, and also to our first panel discussion. So as I said, I'm going to cut away. We're going to do a little panel chit-chat, and then I'll share with you some more data. So understanding that in our first briefing, the students talked to us about this idea of social-based learning. They talked about digitally rich and untethered. And JJ and Jill in particular had some really interesting comments on that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with JJ and Jill and get some insights from them. Now, if you remember, what you shared with me last time was along the lines of some of the things that you were doing in your school life that encompassed either social-based learning, digitally rich learning, or untethered learning. Particularly, Jill, I think you talked about using eye touches. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that use of eye touches? And then, JJ, I'd like to have you talk a little bit, if I remember correctly, you talked about some online tutorials and some of those things, okay? So why don't you share a little bit on that?
So pretty much this is our government class where we have this class set of eye touches we use where everyone has their assigned number. So what happens a lot of times, first of all, we might start our day with picking up our eye touches and, well, we get participation points in this class if we have some little thing about what's going on in the news these days, something interesting, something related to politics or government. We might go onto the internet, Google, look something up, try to, and we learn in our class about that, what's going on in the present day, and so that's one of the things that we do on these eye touches. We also have a bunch of different apps. There's a Constitution app we have on there where we're easily able to access the Constitution, and so when we're discussing this in our class or anything, we're easily able to go to that. There are also things like videos, any kind of We've watched a few videos, one on Bush, another on different senators and all that, and we're easily able to use that. We don't really have to worry about pausing to answer questions or anything because we have our own access to this. And what you also find is just the whole awe, I guess, of I'm using an eye touch in class. Wow. That students pay a lot more attention to what we're actually learning in that class because of just the whole idea of the technology being built into class time.
Okay.
Let's see. like I said before, I used online tutorials to help me with a program called Blender, which is an animation program, and every once in a while, especially during the summer, I was able to expand my knowledge using Blender and these online tutorials to just figure out how to do, just awesome things. So this also happened last week, I think on Saturday. As some people know, there's AP testing that's going on. And me and Jill and I took an AP government test on Monday. So the thing was, on Saturday, to start studying, I created an online guide using Google Documents, and I made a huge set list of definitions and notes. And I invited a couple people, well, actually more than a couple, to really...
Come on, JJ, how many did you invite?
Well, I invited 50 to 60 people to
more
go ahead.
Actually accessed it, but yeah.
Yeah, 50 to 60 people to go onto an online review session with each other, and we decided to participate with each other, figure out questions, because the AP exam was the next day, and we're kind of freaking out. So we got really lucky, and our AP government teacher, Mr. McCarthy, was also right there in the black hair and such. he came on, and he also answered some questions, helped with the notes, and we were able to all collaborate on this document to really just to help us with this AP government test. And if it wasn't for that, I think I'd have done a lot more worse on it. So
some nice social-based learning there in terms of that aspect. Now, of course, we don't know how you did yet on that. We won't know till July, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to come back to you on how JJ and Jill's score was on their AP government test. Okay, so for Angie and Crystal, tell us a little bit about the types of technology that you're seeing used in the schools that you're currently involved with.
I am in a very low socioeconomic status school, and we have a few mobile computer labs that don't really work so well. We have wireless internet in the building that has dead spots. We have some projectors. I think there's a projector cart per grade. For instance, my grade shares one between five classrooms. And we have a computer lab that is very old.
And this is an elementary school?
Yes.
Elementary school. And what about you, Crystal?
And I'm also in an elementary school, and my school's a little bit more blessed with technology. We're able to have a mobile smart board and a 15 computer laptop mobile lab for our older children. And we also have access to two computer labs. There are computers in each classroom for the teachers and for the students to use. So we're very blessed in our school with technology.
Okay. And Jennifer, tell us about the type of technology you're using in your classroom. I'm very anxious to hear about this.
Well, we are probably what schools are aiming for. We have every classroom technology rich, wired with smart boards, projectors, document cameras, smart response systems. Thank you, SMART, who, as Teacher of the Year, SMART donated a classroom set to my school also. And so technology is abundant and available to students, and they flock to it. They cannot wait to get their hands on it, to interact with it. And I'd just like to make a comment on something that JJ said. He said he was working on these things, he said, especially in the summer, and he said, I think it was a Saturday. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, that's really profound, because my kids are doing the same thing. In Garrett County, we had somewhere around 19 snow days and numerous two-hour delayed openings. And our testing schedule was not altered. And my students were using online resources, tutorials, individualized learning programs at home on snow days. The one day I got on, and just for that day alone, my students, my math students, I have maybe 40 of them, did 1,500 math problems by noon. And, of course, I emailed everybody that I knew. Check this out. Everybody's you're doing it on a snow day. So they're eager. And it is extending learning beyond the walls of the classroom, which is the direction that we need to be going. There's only so much we can do within our classroom walls.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to get a lot more data on all this in our next couple panel discussion opportunities. But I do want to have Dr. Ward tell us a little bit about the types of things that I saw yesterday at Kenmore, the types of things that you're excited about that you're doing at your middle school.
Well, I want to just echo the comment that Jennifer just made. We have similar kinds of technologies in our school, thanks to the work of our instructional technology coordinator, Mike Goodman, and SMART. We've been designated a SMART school. Like Jennifer, we have all of our classrooms are equipped with SMART boards, LCD projectors, and we call these classrooms technology-rich classrooms when they have the audio enhancement system in the scanner in addition to the SMART board and LCD projector. When you were talking about the computer-assisted instruction tools that you have, I'll just share with you a few that we use. That's Pangea, which is a math-based computer-assisted instruction. My skills tutor is a language arts and math. We use it primarily now for language arts. And a program called Fast Math that's animated, and it helps to accelerate the learning of students in math. We have about six computer labs and mobile carts on each of our. We're middle school, and we are 6, 7, 8 middle school. We have three floors that accommodate each grade level, and there are mobile labs for each floor. We also have a distance learning lab that that I've always been excited about. I don't think we begin to touch the surface on what we can do with the distance learning capabilities. I spent 14 years in Washington, D.C. public schools before going out to Arlington. We were fortunate to have a distance learning program there. Unlike the one we have now, that one had a program called Curriculum Journeys, where we could tap into master teachers around the world. On one occasion, the teacher was standing at the foot of the pyramid, and the students were able to ask her, what is the texture of it? And she could talk to them about it. On another occasion, a teacher was, we were talking to a psychologist live, and a student asked a very provocative question. I'm not even going to tell you what it was. And got a straight answer from this professional. It just begins to reveal the kind of access that we have. We use our distance learning program for Latin, and we have used it to teach geometry. And that's a little bit of what we have in terms of technology. The teachers at my school will tell you that they don't want to teach in a place that's not fully equipped with technology, and we're very fortunate. We were designated about 15 years ago as arts and communications technology focused school, and the school board was able to support that. They've been generous in their support, and I think that's a very important part of where we are in this journey to infuse technology in our schools. What I mean by that is I think that central offices, contrary to the data point they made, they ranked high in the support of technology, but I'm not so sure that that their actions would support that ranking that they posted there. I think it's essential that school boards and central office folks do make a decision that we're going to infuse 21st century technologies into schools and begin to make the kind of commitment across the nation that Arlington Public Schools has done for Kenmore continues to do.
Fabulous. And as I said, I did have the opportunity to visit the school yesterday, so I saw a couple different things. So I want to share one little story, Dr. Ward. I hope it's okay, Michael. It's sort of out of, I hope I'm not telling any secrets here. But when we were visiting the school yesterday and walking around, one of the teachers had a laptop problem. And so she was telling us how the technical support people from the district had come to take her laptop to do some sort of fix-it work on it. Is that right, Michael? Am I telling that story correctly? And she explained to me that she said to them, well, you can't take it right now. I'm right in the middle of the lesson. I can't teach without this technology. So, I mean, that's a really interesting statement about this is gone way beyond where we used to think, oh, it was a nice extra thing. It was a side thing. It was something that was at the end of the day or at the end of a period. Okay, so let me share a little bit more of the data, and then we'll come back and talk to our esteemed panel here. We asked administrators about the barriers that they had specifically implementing a couple of the different emerging technologies, in particular online classes, mobile devices, and also digital content. And there were a number of responses that administrators told us that were barriers. The funding, as you would imagine. In many cases, they didn't have access to the digital content that they wanted. They were concerned with mobile devices, that maybe there'd be a digital equity problem if they had their students utilize their own devices. There was a number of different things. What we thought was really profound was that there was one common theme throughout all of three of those different sets of responses, and that was that their teachers, their classroom teachers, either were not trained in how to utilize these different types of emerging technologies, or were not comfortable yet with being able to implement them fully within instruction. And so what I pulled out for you was some of the ways that we are hearing from our polling data about how teachers are telling us about the use of technology in the classroom. Once again, for our panel, this might not be the same experience because I obviously brought with us here today some extraordinary panelists. But from the data that we heard nationwide, kind of a tipping point situation. Above the line in terms of widespread usage, accessing the internet, communication tools, the projectors, the computer projectors, also digital media tools. The types of things that we're still developing or still being experimented with in the classroom by teachers, so not up to the tipping point line, would be about the use of games. JJ talked about some games that he'd been involved with, the interactive whiteboard, some collaboration tools, the use of mobile devices or online textbooks, still emerging. When we looked at teacher preparatory programs and the use of technology within teacher preparatory programs, what our pre-service teacher data told us was that the students were doing a lot of writing assignments and communications, which echoed what we heard from our K-12 students. They were also accessing some digital content. They were creating presentations, also getting familiar with either taking an online class or online tests. The things that were still emerging from the viewpoint of our pre-service teachers were about using online communities, leveraging some of the social networking tools for virtual discussions, for blogs, accessing online tutors. We asked the pre-service teachers, so what's the best way for you to learn about how to use technology use in education? And what the pre-service teachers told us was that their field experiences were absolutely number one, either from their student teaching or from classroom observations. But then, as you see, two-thirds of them told us they also were picking up tips and techniques by learning, by watching the way their current professors were using technology in the classroom. And I'm going to have Crystal and Angie comment on that in a moment. So we took it one step further, and we asked the pre-service teachers, so what type of tech tools are you using in your methods class? What types of things are those professors using so that we could understand what the observation value was? They were doing a lot of things with productivity tools. They were creating presentations, starting to work with e-portfolios that we thought was very interesting, also creating of some digital media and getting familiar with how to share student work. What we were a little bit more concerned about was that we did not see, and actually my statistic didn't show up here, but we did not see where there was widespread use yet, at least from a teaching standpoint, in terms of how to use student data to inform teaching, and we know that's all very important. That number is actually 14% of our pre-service teachers told us that they were using that. So that's still on the leading edge, at least in many of our schools of education. We asked both the pre-service teachers and the in-service teachers to comment for us on the types of digital resources that they were using in their classroom. Now, for the pre-service teachers, that was what they were using in their methods class or in some of their content specific classes. For the in-service teachers, it was what they were actually using with their students. So the number one type of digital content that we saw being used was teaching aids, lesson plans, those type of things, bringing those type of things from the internet. We also saw that the in-service teachers were utilizing some different types of software, it might be easier if I do this, using some different types of software to help their students develop skills. Those could be writing skills, it could be math skills, it could be the program that Dr. Word talked about utilizing to help students with math skills. We also saw, though, some differences between the pre-service teachers and the in-service teachers. We actually saw that the pre-service teachers were a little bit more familiar with online curriculum, with utilizing podcasts, and video, and also online textbooks than their in-service teachers. So we thought that was very encouraging in terms of the pre-service teachers getting those type of experiences. So another opportunity here for you to use the handhelds, the smart response systems. And I don't know where my Kimberly is to help with the... Ah, she's already up here. My Vanna White, my own personal Vanna White. And we asked the pre-service teachers, so what will be the greatest challenge that you'll face when you get out into the classroom? A really interesting question. We took away, for your purposes, classroom management and discipline, because that was number one. I'll tell you that one right now. I bet you could have bet that one, right? But we gave a couple different responses. So again, choose your favorite here. Would it be that the teachers were concerned about helping their students do well on standardized tests, communications with parents, having enough supplies for their classroom, using technology within instruction, or making sure that their students were well prepared for the jobs of the future? So again, choose A, B, C, D, or E, and two enters. And we'll see what this esteemed audience had to say to this question, and then I'll show you what the pre-service teachers actually told us. And I'm not going to have I'm not even going to look at Crystal and Angie, because I bet they already know the answer. Okay, Kimberly? Again, we're kind of all over the board here, folks. It looks like preparing students for the jobs of the future was 29%. Helping students do well on standardized tests was 23%. Communications with parents, 16%, as was using technology in instruction. So let's see what the pre-service teachers actually told us. Oops, go back one. Oops, I'm too jumpy here. Oh, we're doing it at the same time? There we go. It actually was communications with parents, which is also very interesting, considering that when we asked the administrators about some of the challenges, I don't know if you remember, but for the administrators, that idea of communicating effectively with parents was also high on their list. It speaks to this idea of bringing all the stakeholders in to educate the whole child, and I thought that was very impressive that the pre-service teachers were already recognizing that. I also thought it was interesting that they were not really concerned about the use of technology within instruction. That speaks to the fact that we know that these pre-service teachers are digital natives. It's not an odd thing for them to be thinking about technology within instruction. It's going to be part of their standard plan. Okay, so let's get to Let's get into our next panel discussion. So I've got a few more questions here for our group. And this time we're going to start over with, obviously, our pre-service teachers, with Angie and with Crystal. And what I'd like to have you do is tell me a little bit about how were you prepared at Frostburg to use technology. What types of experiences have you had, either within your methods or your content classes or in your student teaching or classroom observations? What have your experiences been?
We were required to take 3 technology courses over the course of our training. And in those technology courses, they taught us how to use smart boards. They taught us how to do presentations. We even had a project where we were using online grade books and turning those grade books into graphs to look at trends in our student data and things like how we could use that data to then improve our teaching and to see what we needed to do better.
Okay. And within our technology courses, we have found other resources for teachers. And my most, the one that I learned about the most was field trips, virtual field trips. Okay. And being up in Allegheny County, it would be very difficult to take your students to the Assateague Islands to see and experience that. So that was very beneficial. But Most of our professors use the smart boards within our classrooms, so we get to see that. And we have a Mac computer lab. We actually have two now, and so we're able to use the Mac computers.
Okay. Do you feel that you were well prepared to be able to be successful in a technology-enabled classroom?
I do. I feel like when we go into our schools, we're sort of the pioneers of technology,
okay,
especially in the area that we're in. We use all these different new technologies that these teachers haven't seen before, and then they ask us how we do it, and then that's something that they take and they use in their classroom. So because we are trained in it, then we not necessarily train them, but we at least expose them to it so they know that those types of things are out there.
And I was actually called up to a second grade classroom yesterday. I am in kindergarten, and the teacher was having a problem with PowerPoint, and so I actually showed her how they were having a presentation for Mother's Day and how to put music to the PowerPoint. And she, when she was trying to figure out, she said that she would call one of the younger students. So I was able to help her, and I've also helped with my mentor teacher with technology and the other teachers with PowerPoint, Safari Montage, and other programs.
That's a great lead-in to my, a great story, Crystal, thank you. But great lead-in to my next question for Jennifer, which is, obviously you have seen a progression in terms of, or a spectrum, shall we say, of teachers' use of technology, maybe not at your school, but while you've been traveling around the state as the Maryland Teacher of the Year. What do you think is the most effective way for teachers to get comfortable, to get really fluent with using technology? I'm sure you've thought about this.
I have thought about this. I have taught for 15 years at the same school, so when I was hired at my school, there was very little technology aside from the one computer lab, and you signed up and you took the students. So I really have seen a progression from minimal technology and minimal technology used by teachers all the way up through technology rich, and you know, we're still not where we want to be. I'm not sure if we'll ever arrive at a place where we say we know it all, we're teaching it all, we feel confident, but it's a gradual progression. I see it most effectively used with students as partners, and we had a few teachers who were very reluctant to take on, I think, the risk that comes with technology, because when you take on something new that you're not necessarily an expert at yourself, then it does expose you to technical difficulties, and you need some support within the classroom. So at our school, we have two technology support specialists who are available mostly to go in and help with the design of lesson plans, but also with the execution of lesson plans, so that if the teacher needs support, we're there to call on us. What we have found is that teachers use that at the beginning, but then are very, I got this. But just to know that we're there if they need us, and they're gradually working with students and technology. So it's great to see that.
That concept of leveraging students to help with technology, actually Michael from Kenmore Middle School and I were talking about this yesterday, because one of the data points, we haven't asked this question in the last year or so, but a couple of years ago we asked a question of the teachers on the Speak Up survey, some of you may remember it, where we said, how comfortable are you tapping into the expertise that your students have to help you with technology in your classroom? And it was interesting because the result of that data finding was contrary to what you might think in terms of conventional wisdom. It actually was the more experienced teachers that were more willing to have the students help them than the younger students who thought they knew it. But the older teachers were willing to take the older, more experienced teachers were willing to take the help from whatever resource it could come forward. I've got a question for JJ and Jill, and then Dr. Word, I'm going to ask you about what are your expectations for new teachers that you're hiring in terms of their technology use. But I know that the last time that we were all together, JJ, you, and I think Jill, you mentioned this also, we were talking about this concept of teacher training and whether or not you thought that your teachers had the skills that they needed to be able to fully leverage the technology that was in the classroom or to bring different types of technology in. Could you comment a little bit on that from your experiences? And also, have you been involved with helping teachers learn about using technology?
Most teachers in our school, especially since our school is like technology rich, since we go to Washington Lee, especially since it's really new, there are smart boards in every single classroom. So I'm pretty sure teachers get a lot of training from it. But most teachers nowadays know what they're doing, especially compared to middle school teachers, elementary school teachers. No offense to any of them that are here. As of now, most teachers know what they're doing, but when they don't know, usually most students are able to help. That hasn't happened much in high school, so I can't really show them my expertise or anything, but, if there ever arises a chance, I'll try. But as of now, teachers know what they're doing.
Okay. Jill?
Well, I mean, I find that in a lot of my classes, yes, they do know. The smart boards are definitely what I use the most. But there are some teachers, I mean, they usually are the elder ones, but I find that they're actually very willing to call on any of us. I mean, personally, I'm not the complete expert in all of the technology-based stuff, but I definitely have friends and people in those classes. The teachers will make a joke about not knowing what the heck they're doing, and the kids are very willing to help them out, and the teachers are very willing to also learn from the students on how to work one thing or another. So, I mean, we learn from them, they learn from us.
I like that collaborative learning environment that we've been talking about. Now, Dr. Word, when you're thinking about hiring new teachers for Kenmore, are you looking at any specific technology skills that you want them to bring forward, or an attitude or a value statement around the use of technology? Is that something that figures into your thought process?
Ironically, it almost doesn't have to. I think these Generation Y and the millennials who are coming down the pike, we know that they seem to be wired with a particular skill set to incorporate and integrate technology into the classroom. Certainly, we expect them to use it. But, I like the conversation we were having about collaboration, because I think that's the key. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated the conversation around collaboration with students. Even if technology weren't there, isn't that the power and the beauty of what happens with a teacher in a classroom when we're having a conversation about our academic development and our growth, and we're motivated to move forward? I think that's key. We're organized into professional learning communities in our school, which foster the same kind of collaboration. What I've seen is what you've heard here. The younger people have the skill set. They come with an interest and a willingness. Now, you come into a school like ours, as I said, it was designated 15 years ago, and the school is going to integrate technology and arts. Art's more difficult, actually. I've often said that technology is widely accepted as a tool that can enhance instruction. We're not having this kicking and screaming that happened many, many years ago. I've been around long enough to remember when we were still working on typewriters in schools. So the equipment is there. So just by virtue of the equipment being there, the expectation is made. And then these students, these young people are coming with this skill set. And as a matter of fact, some of our youngest members of our faculty have been presenters at regional, state, and national conferences. We've had a couple at the SMARTS, National Council of Teachers of Math in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, demonstrating smart products. They do this all the time. And the collaboration continues on a day-to-day basis. Teachers are with each other in teams. They're with each other in professional learning community teams. And they're talking about techniques and strategies and ways to use it. It's really an interesting thing to see, and the synergy that it fosters is exciting, and it's wonderful to have the equipment there for them to use and to constantly be challenging me to bring more in, and I'm excited about that. When we started down this path, we didn't have all of these things, and I think that when collectively we create a vision that says this is where we're trying to go, opportunities came to us that we couldn't have anticipated. When we moved into a new building 5 years ago, and in that plan, we we were asking for 5 LCD projectors. And over the time of that planning process, the technology is emerging in a way we said, that's just not going to work. And then we got lucky and got involved with a grant opportunity where our teachers, if they were willing to commit to 10 hours of professional development and create some lessons, they would be given teams of 2 LCD projectors. Once we did that, the district said, well, if you went that far, we will give you $1,500 per LCD to mount. So these are the kinds of things that happen when a collective group say, we're committed to this, and it starts to build and grow like that. But the expectation on the technology side, they come with perhaps more higher expectations for me than I have for them.
Well, we're actually going to talk about that right now, Dr. Ward. Thank you so much for a wonderful lead-in. We asked both the pre-service teachers and administrators, in particular principals, what experiences would best prepare you or your incoming teachers to teach in a current 21st century classroom. And what we found was, I'll point a couple things out to you here, that both the administrators and the aspiring teachers felt it was important to be able to differentiate instruction and incorporate digital media into lessons. We also, though, saw that the administrators actually did have some higher expectations than their aspiring teachers. That's not to say that the aspiring teachers weren't already familiar with these tools. They just weren't necessarily expecting that in the classroom. And that was along the lines of incorporating Web 2.0 tools, to your point, Dr. Ward, about collaboration, being able to use some of those tools for collaboration, being part of an online-oriented professional learning community, being able to take an online class. As you see, almost 58% of the administrators wanted their new hire teachers to have taken an online class and experience that type of a learning environment. And then also to be able to have incorporated mobile devices into the classroom. So in some cases, some of the administrators did have a slightly higher perspective on what were the key skills that they wanted to see in that upcoming new teacher. Now, I mentioned to you at the start that we have that sort of the ultimate question, as we call it, in Project Tomorrow. What do you think about in terms of designing that ultimate school? What technology tools and services would have the greatest positive impact on learning? And we do question students, parents, administrators, as well as some of the pre-service teachers and teachers in a slightly different version. So the key thing with that is, going back to our student vision and the questions that we had at the start here, are we all on the same page, or are we still seeing some digital disconnects between what that vision looks like? So let's take a look here, reminding you about the social-based learning, the untethered learning, and the digitally rich learning. This is our last opportunity, Kimberly. I believe Kimberly's still over there. So if you still have those smart response, which stakeholder group do you think had the largest increase in regular use of their social networking site from 2008 to 2009? So we compared our 2008 data to 2009. Do you think the group that had the largest increase was middle school students, high school students, parents, teachers, or administrators?
Percent growth or raw numbers?
Percent growth. Thank you, sir. Okay, so this answer may surprise you, but my audience may be.
Is this in school or
personal use. Personal use. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Kimberly. What have we got here? It looked like the largest group here from our audience was middle school students. 34% believed it was middle school students. 36% believed it was parents, 23% believed it was teachers. Let's take a look at what we actually saw from the data. Actually, the highest growth percentage-wise was administrators and teachers. Almost a threefold increase in teachers having a social networking site Now, what we have found, and if you go back to remembering what we had talked about with our digital advance team, if we start looking at how the students are using technology outside of school, we're then seeing their use inside of school, we're seeing the same thing with teachers. As they're starting to use some of the social networking tools, starting to use them for personal collaboration with their peers, they're starting to understand where some of the value would be, and their administrators are supporting those efforts. So a couple quick things here, and then we're going to open it up for your questions. Some of the other things that we saw in terms of that ultimate school is that we did see where aspiring teachers were very interested in using collaboration tools. In terms of untethered learning, our teachers and aspiring teachers were actually in front of students and administrators in terms of valuing internet access this year. However, our students, not surprisingly, are the ones that are more interested in online classes, mobile devices, and actually tied with principals in terms of the use of laptops within school. And then in terms of that digitally rich environment, and I already mentioned the fact that the aspiring teachers, we heard strongly from the aspiring teachers about their use of e-portfolios. So not surprisingly, they saw the role for e-portfolios in their ultimate school. But students were in front in terms of the online textbooks again, really wanting to be able to leverage that type of digital media, as they were with games. However, we also thought it was very interesting that those digitally native pre-service teachers were equally enamored with the value of games within education environments, and then with the digital media tools as well. So let's open it up now for some questions from the audience, either about any of the topics that we've talked about today or any other questions that you might have for our students, our pre-service teachers, our Teacher of the Year, or our principal. Yes, ma'am. We do disaggregate the data based on years of experience of the teachers. And what is really interesting is that, in particular, and I don't have all of my data statistics for you right at the tip of my fingertips, though I'm sure Lori Smith does, my director of research in the back. Sorry, Lori. But the question where we asked teachers, I thought this was most significant, the question where we asked teachers, what was the impact of technology on your students and on your own personal productivity? We saw no difference based on the years of experience amongst the teachers, that the more experienced teachers had the same types of value statements about the impact of technology. We do see some differences when we look at things like mobile devices and gaming. We definitely do see some differences. But I'd be happy to give you some of that disaggregated data additionally. Some other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Our professional development has been led by our instructional technology coordinator, who happens to be here with me this evening, Michael Goodman. And it's been a range of areas that we focused on. Included in that is how to use Blackboard. We have a huge initiative at our school to communicate with parents. And so our gradebook allows that access, but the school district wasn't doing it. So we trained our folks in how to communicate with parents, share, make the grade book and the grading practice a little more transparent. When I talked about how we were able to acquire those LCD projectors, it was through a project that Congressman Moran led. It was called Adventure of the American Mind. And it was a way to access these $6 billion, I think, primary resources available through the Library of Congress. We trained all these teachers how to access these resources. They were also trained in how to create movies using the Ken Burns effect and iMovie. Some fabulous work done in that arena. Of course, with the computer-assisted instruction programs that I mentioned, there's training involved in all of those, and I only mentioned three of them. And that list of training goes on and on. We've been fortunate to have five early release days for our teachers to invest in professional development every year, and sometimes we'll use all of them for technology, depending upon where we are and what initiatives are pushing us that particular year. Sometimes it'll be art, sometimes it'll be a mixture of the two. What I've found is that we've been able to kind of leave some of the professional development to teams of teachers because they're already excited about it. They believe in it. And the tools are there, not suggesting that we've mastered the gamut. We haven't. I mean, there are lots of concerns that I have, one being how to integrate these mobile devices that everybody's walking around. And I walked into a workshop once, and the workshop presenter put some questions on the board similar to what you're doing and said, take out your cell phone and text the response. And so why can't we do that in schools? And it's more a policy matter than anything. I got away from your question. That's a little bit of what we've done with professional development.
Jennifer, go ahead.
I would just like to say that what I have noticed, and this echoes what you have said earlier, was that it was less of a kicking and screaming once the technology arrived. I think once the teachers, and it wasn't, I found it a little bit of a disparity when they were on carts, because then it required somebody to show up and you had to hook it up and it wasn't owned. And when our classrooms became technology rich, it created sort of a ripple effect of excitement among the teachers, just probably like it did when you were handed the smart response. At first it was, uh-oh, what is this? Do I pass this to the next person? And then as you started to participate, wow, this is really cool. So teachers are forever trying to move themselves forward in the field of technology. And what we find is that our biggest challenge is time. And for us, for those of us who are immigrants to technology, we find that the technology is so rapidly changing that to keep up with all of the new things coming out, that's our major challenge. But at the same time, I would say that if we were having this conversation in a whole other decade, we would be talking about Commodore 64 specifically. So it's not really about the specific technology that we're using. It's more about teaching students how to responsibly use the technology, use it for a purpose, and navigate the resources that are available to them, regardless of what new technology comes out, and it will.
And it's really about what we talk about in terms of adopting and adapting those technologies. It's hard to predict.
It is.
Just like it's hard for us to predict what are those jobs of the future that we're preparing today and tomorrow's students for. But that opportunity to adapt to it is actually important, a more important life skill maybe than it's been before. Maybe not. Yes, ma'am. So we do a series of focus groups every spring, sometimes with students, sometimes with teachers. I've done some parent groups. I actually had the opportunity at Kenmore yesterday to meet with some group of 7th and 8th graders. And the focus groups are always fascinating conversations to have with students. And they're obviously appropriate to the age group. I also did a focus group in Baltimore. My friend Ron Beezer is here from Baltimore City. Ron, in March. I was here in March, yeah. And we went out to one of the schools and did a focus group there. And we had elementary students as well as middle school students. We use the focus groups to understand sort of the underneath of some of the data. So what is it that really is meant by the students in these particular regards? I think one of the things that was so interesting to me whenever I meet with students, whenever I had the opportunity to do focus groups with students, and we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, is that there's really a universal experience that students are having around the use of technology outside of school. And it doesn't matter whether I'm in Baltimore City or I was in Arlington yesterday or in Southern California or in Texas last year. It's really fascinating to me that the internet is really flattening the playing field for so many students and giving them access to a whole bunch of different resources. The other thing that's always very interesting from the student focus groups is how much learning the students are doing outside of school and leveraging the technology. And actually, JJ talked about that in terms of some of the work that you were doing last summer on a Saturday, in terms of really driving their own educational destiny. And I hear that not just from high school students. I hear that from middle school students. I hear that from elementary students in terms of how they're leveraging technology effectively. Yes, ma'am.
Just following up your response, I wanted to ask Jill and JJ, could wave a magic wand and make a change using technology inside school, what would that be and why?
That's a good question.
Let's see. If I had a magic wand that could change something based on technology, that's actually a very tough question to answer because there's a lot of things you could change.
Don't hold back, JJ.
Okay, it kind of depends. Are we talking about like technology that we already have or technology that hasn't been invented yet?
Either.
Anything that you could
see. It could be.
Well, first off, for technology that's already here, laptops or some type of portable device would be a very nice thing. Laptops for each child. And I know that's not really possible right now because it's extremely expensive. I know basic laptops run about $500, well, probably less, I think, $400 to $500. And having a school that has nearly like 1,500 kids, you are going to push the limits of money that you have. But laptops would be one of the major things that every child could have, and it'd be amazing to have. That way, first off, we save off a lot of paper if we could just turn it into him. I mean, right now, I know that at school, my binder has literally over 300 to 400 pages of paper just from teachers and such. If it was something that hasn't been invented, though. I know it's going on a balance here, but I think it'd be something more holographic, something that you could just keep around. It's kind of hard to explain this because, of course, it hasn't been invented yet, but, something that won't interfere when you try to carry it. Because I know laptops are kind of bulky right now. Something that expands when you need it and, closes and it's really small when you don't need it.
Jill?
I'd say I was actually talking to my government teacher about this going home from this last time, but I had this idea, we both take government at our school, and something I've found with this, that we have this textbook with text and text and words and words, and you get these assignments to read these chapters and all that, and you realize after a while, like, this is really boring. I'm falling asleep. And I feel I almost had this vision of some kind of either audio or just like something with pictures or something to make it so much easier to understand that you'd actually be, even if it was tactile, just something that you could, that keeps you like interacting with what you're learning instead of just reading and or having it said to you in that way that you're actually in some way using or something like that with it.
So really an interactive type learning experience as opposed to a flat learning experience. Actually, one of the questions that we asked the students on the student survey is, what if you could design the ultimate online or digital textbook? What type of features and functionality would you like to have? I don't know if Jill was familiar with that question, but a lot of the things that Jill mentioned in terms of the interactivity, in terms of having an online learning experience, in terms of accessing experts through an online experience, being able to have virtual simulations and different experiments built into that textbook, that it would have a video component, that it would truly be an interactive learning experience as opposed to a flat textile or a textual-based experience. We are at the end of our allotted time. However, I know that my esteemed panel, which, we could go on for hours tapping into all their expertise, will stick around for a little bit if you have some additional questions. I want to, of course, thank our wonderful sponsors that are here, our good friends from CDWG, my wonderful friends from K-12, Mary Beth, thank you, and team. Mick and Kimberly for the support of the tools here today, as well as my good friends from Blackboard, our partners that are here, and then also this wonderful panel. Please join me in congratulating this panel. And I just want to leave you with this particular quote. We asked the pre-service teachers, so how are you going to define success as a teacher? And this sort of hit my heart. And so I thought I'd share it with you as sort of my closing comments. So this is an aspiring teacher, a third-year student in an undergraduate program from Wisconsin, and she said successful mean for her when she's seeing her students succeed in life, attain their dreams, learn new attitudes, and reach higher and go further than they ever did before. And I think that beautifully sums up probably what where all of your hearts are in terms of being here and being in education. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great having you.
We need to do some photos.
Okay.